You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Ariel Jackson. So, Ariel, you're running for office, and today, and this episode of these three episodes of the Made of Clay Report are the candidates running for the 5th Ward alderperson position on City Council. So, start. Who are you? What do we need to know about you to get a balanced picture of who you are?
I do cherish your loaded questions. I was reviewing them because you sent them out, and I was just struck again by why I think this is so important is these long form moments that give us a chance to really give people a picture into who we are, because I think that the decisions that we make at the table, while complicated and mostly about setbacks and pension salaries and positions, are really more about what we believe Ithaca and the greater area should be and feel like. So I think knowing who we all are on a level, like somebody just pointedly saying, who are you, I think is really enlightening, to put it mildly. I'm looking forward to hearing. I've enjoyed your interviews with others in the same capacity. I don't know who I am. I don't think any of us really fully know who we are until we see each other, see ourselves through somebody else's eyes, especially. So I don't know. And also, I'm everything. I've realized that in the last couple of years. I think the last time we spoke, my boys were much younger. I have a four-year-old and an almost 5.5-year-old now. And they are the same size. They are at the Montessori school on the South Hill that my in-laws generously afford us. So I have basically twin boys. I left my husband a little over a year ago, so that was a major life change for us. And for me, freeing and empowering and kind of in a beautiful way, also really hard and complicated, and it takes constant adjusting. So I am a woman, I'm a mother, I am a lover, a provider, a comforter, an ear, a psychologist, a financial analyst, a chef. I have, you know, in the last couple of years, I've, you know, helped run a support group for mothers. I've been a project manager for artists all over the world. I have, I helped start a nonprofit based on information. I was a journalist. I am a journalist. I'm an educator. I clean houses. You know, I do, I paint, I do a little bit of everything. I basically was raised in a household where you were the jack of all trades. So if somebody says, hey, how do you do this? It always floors me that I just kind of figure it out. You know, I know where to get the resources. I know where to find the information. I put a toilet in at my parents' house one day, and I helped my parents redo their whole bathroom from the studs up, including plumbing. And we were 3/4 of the way through the bathroom. My dad looks at me and he goes, so where'd you learn to do all this stuff? And I'm like, HGTV. And you see his face and he's like, you just like ripped apart my whole house.
Based on HGTV.
Based on a television show. And I'm like, yeah, the toilet works great, doesn't it? And he's like, yeah, yeah, it does. And it's been 12 years and the bathroom is still perfect.
You just got to get the wax ring in right and, and get the screws down and tight, but not too tight.
Not exactly. So that's really, really who I am is... you know, present me with something that needs to be fixed, and I'll figure out how to pull the pieces together to make it come together. Because I'm an academic at heart. I was taught to come at something both philosophically and practically. You find the information you need and you apply it to the greater problem.
Right. And I guess I wouldn't, where I come from, that would not be called academic. That would be called country.
Funny, because I was not raised in the country.
Because that means you're, I mean, When you're generally skillful, you don't wear a label.
Yeah, I really struggle with that. It's so hard, especially running for office. You know, who are you? What do you do? What do you want me to do?
Or what needs to be done?
Right.
And you know, my kids suffered from having a father that they, you know, people would ask, what does your dad do for a living? Well, you know, what does he not do? He dabbles in this and that and the other thing.
Yes.
And my main point is to try to make it so that we have as little debt as possible and that we have as rich a life as possible. And I kind of hear that same struggle in your reflections.
Yeah. I'm teaching my, you know, before I even decided to run, I said to my boys, you know, this is what Common Council does. And, you know, this is why I'm going to do it. This is why it's important to me. you know, and Luca, my older boy, is, you know, he'll walk around and tell people that, you know, mom is going to decide where all the trees go. And she makes great decisions, so you should vote for her. You know, it's like Mondays.
Nothing like the junior Met campaign set, yes.
Yeah. My only wish is that I wish they were a little older so I could actually bring them to meetings.
Right.
I like the idea that they're going to grow up hearing and seeing how their community is, you know, grown and built and shaped.
Right.
Those meetings. I mean, they hear. I listen to podcasts and I listen to the live streams of all these meetings. So they hear it.
Right.
It's like part of their subconscious at this point.
Right. Right. But I brought my children sometimes to staff meetings at the church where I worked. Mm-hmm. And that was actually very useful. They could zone out. Mm-hmm. And they could also focus in. And, you know, there's nothing super confidential that was going on at those meetings. But they got a sense of what it means to be an adult in an adult world. Mm-hmm. That can't be permanent daycare, but it is a really neat thing. And I growing up on a farm, we constantly witnessed our parents negotiating life and living it with other adults.
They now call that unschooling. That's a fancy word for it now.
Yeah. It's just life. Yeah.
It's education. And this is what I think is one of the tenements of society, and that can kind of be the Hail Mary is education, is, you know, poverty, disenfranchisement, all that stuff. And even some of the tenements of racism started with don't educate them, don't teach them to read, don't allow them to vote if they can't read. Education, I think, is everything. And education isn't just sitting in a classroom.
Right. And given the way this has come up in the conversation, what you're really talking about is access to relationships and the knowledge that comes from relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And the very poor and the very wealthy tend to isolate.
Yeah.
And we don't often realize how the two suffer from some very similar problems. When you have a lot of money to throw at something, it's different, but it still doesn't solve the isolation. And that's huge. You brought some music with you. What would you like to start with?
So I did a campaign meet and greet the other day. Actually, let's go back even further.
Sure.
So my partner currently is a DJ, and he has a heart for doing benefits. So he's always volunteering to do benefits. So they did a Lift Every Voice benefit at, I think it was St. Paul's a couple weeks ago.
Yes, the church with Calvary Baptist, and I think they used to do it.
Yeah, for villages, I guess. Yep. So Travis Knapp was there, and he sang some songs. And then afterwards, there was this beautiful Steinway, and everybody was clearing out and doing munchies, and he sat down and started playing. And these young men came over who had done presentations at the village because they had been so impacted by the efforts. And Travis immediately enveloped them and started to teach them. And they all sat down at the piano and they were learning together. And it was so moving to see that's the point. That's the sense of community that in education and it was just so beautiful. So, Travis is a friend of a friend and a friend of mine. And I did a campaign meet and greet on Sunday and I said, can you come and play?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he came and played. And then when I was looking for music for this, I said, can you send me the track that you played the other night? And he said, yeah, of course. So he gave me his song. It's called Democracy. It's a chant. That's a colloquial chant, but he turned it into music.
Cool.
If you want to give that a...
Sure.
Give that a listen. Are we ready?
Here we go.
Democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
We gather here with voices raised so we can go back home today to raise our food and families and live our lives in peace. Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
When someone truly speaks for you, you'd better speak for them. When someone truly represents you, you'd best represent. Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
climate change. One person, one vote. If you support the troops, bring them home. Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Children hurt, I hurt too.
We're all in this together.
Gay, straight, woman, man, black, white, brown, tan, immigrant or native child.
We're all in this together.
Buddhist, Hindu, Jewish, Christian, Sufi, Muslim, or no religion. One truth, many paths.
We're all in this together.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Ariel Jackson. So Ariel, looking back on your life, what experiences have most defined or shaped the life you value living today?
What experiences? So I kind of will give you a, because this is a Made of Clay Report sure. interview, it's not going to be any good unless we go super deep. and the tenements of my campaign really are communication, and primary sources mm-hmm. and access, to relatable, understandable, practical information before decisions are made. I sat through a meeting a couple years ago for the Trey Block Building, which is now was mm-hmm. the Elmira Savings Bank. They now it's going to be City Center,
right?
And a bunch of residents came in and were like, "This building is way too high. You're blocking out the sun. Like we don't want this. We don't want this feeling. This corridors and this mm-hmm. busy, tall, nasty downtown." And you could see the faces of the people on Common Council going, "Guys, this has like been decided." Like the zoning for the height variant, the stuff had been changed 2 years ago mm-hmm. and they were so frustrated. And the people in the audience were so frustrated. They were like, we didn't sign on for this. We don't like this. We don't want this. And at the end, I saw both parties kind of wounded and frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Common Council members and I was like, why is this a surprise? And they're like, we did public hearings. We did public meetings. Nobody came out.
Right.
You know, and the public right, were right. like, they didn't include us. We had no idea. And I was like, and I, you know, as I interviewed and met with Common Council members before I started, you know, my campaign, I said, did anybody give them a visual? You know, I'm an educator by form. There's like, mm-hmm. there's visual learners and auditory learners right, and, right. you know, did you give them a visual? Well, no, it's kind of hard to conceptualize. They need a visual. I need a visual.
Right, right.
You know, so seeing that in a media landscape in this town that we have, that we certainly had at the time, but it's slightly changed now. There's not a lot of like clear, precise information. And that kind of makes me physically ill. When I was, I had a really tumultuous childhood. And at one point somebody was trying to keep me from giving, from telling something. And there was a very violent exhibit to say, don't tell the truth.
Right.
And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I finally looked at my mother and I was like, why on earth does it make me physically ill when there's something that needs to be said and I feel like I'm not allowed to say it? She goes, well, because of this incident. And so now it becomes like this, like it just kind of rises up in me, like we need to understand. There needs to be an unveiling of the truth. There needs to be a way that everybody can have the information, because I believe that the best in humanity, especially in Ithaca, we mm-hmm. are some of the most beautiful people,
right.
you know, in this community, in the Fifth Ward, in the whole city, in the county. We are just truly beautiful people. We make beautiful things. There's really no reason why, if given all the information, we won't make the best and most beautiful decisions. So to me, it kind of the seed for this started at that meeting, because I've never, ever thought in a million years about running for office. You know, I was getting interviewed by the Ithaca Times and, you know, the reporter said, you know, what makes you a good personality to be a politician and run for office? I said, I don't have a good personality to run for office. I tend to be too passionate and too loud and too enthusiastic. And that can come across as abrasive, you know, being a woman, you really can't That's a whole different thing. But
I mean, or you adopt a Bella Abzug approach to life, and that's abrasiveness is just part of the role.
Yeah, it just it really has just become like, you know, no, it's really very clear. You know, when mm-hmm. when I started, I mean, I have a show at the radio station. You know, sure. when I started, I was the first one at the news team to say, no, why can't we just go to the meetings and report from the meetings? And I would sit there and I would take in the same information as two other media outlets, and all three stories would be different. And I'm like, mm-hmm. this is unacceptable. It just is, you know, so.
And what? How were they different? Why is that? And why is that unacceptable?
It's unacceptable because it's not just perspective. It's like some of the you know, the information is wrong. You know, somebody will write a lead, you know, or write the story while the meeting is going on and not wait for the conclusion.
Right.
You know, somebody insinuates that Cornell's going to pay for something. And by the end of the meeting, you're it's like, clear that they're not. There's no way Cornell's going to pay for something. So your lead of, you know, Cornell proposes joint. No, that's not at all what they said. As a matter of fact, the guy, you know, you got to take in body language. The guy was moving in his seat going, no way. I'm just bringing this to you for you to deal with. Like, you know, anything from that to, you know, we take in a lot of information on our phones now and in Facebook. So if your headline cuts off when it's in the format of a Facebook clip, your lead needs to not be deceptive, like straight up. I mean, there was one when they were the legislature was discussing Indigenous Peoples Day. The lead was legislature denies Indigenous Peoples Day, but the rest of it said, comma, sends back to committee. But you never saw the sent back to committee. It just says denied.
Right.
So the community, in a hurry, tired, stressed, doesn't have time to click all the way through, just thinks that the legislature tanked it.
Right.
And that's not what happened. And you're responsible for how that comes out. So it's these things that have shaped who I am. And, you know, my seeking of, you know, information and truth and reality in a way that can be maddening to some.
Right. So I want to stick kind of with the roots of what your experiences are. And you made a strong, you know, sense that this is where I want to get. Is there just a truth? Or are there multiple truths? I mean, my experience with this town is that we are a small city that's refused to grow up. We have refused to acknowledge that we're a city. Literally from the time I came here as an undergrad in 1976 up until sometime in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, we decided we weren't going to serve the relatively low income by having box stores, and there are problems with box stores, but we also created an animosity with rural areas that didn't need to be so, because we provoked it, because we were kind of self-righteous in our quote liberality and lack of liberality. And we've built buildings which kind of are minimally financially viable, but their costs are so high because they're shorter than they could be to be more economically and bring the costs down. So we really haven't dealt in some ways with the issues, and the facts are and the truths are multiple, and it's part of the kind of life you desire and what you will tolerate other people desiring.
So what you're stumbling upon in so many different areas is the absolute fundamental beauty of who we are.
Yeah.
We are a walking dichotomy. Every single person in Ithaca loves Ithaca dearly, and every single person wants it to be exactly how it was when they arrived.
Except not me.
But you know what I mean? Okay. I mean, if you came in college and you loved it when you were there, you want it to be exactly that. If you, you know, moved here as a young family or, you know, in the workforce, you want it to be exactly how it was there. And that could span 50 years.
Right.
So the problem then becomes, how do we maintain an Ithaca that everybody believes is the true Ithaca and yet still be economically viable? And at the same time, there's this super, super beautiful foundation that is, we are defiant in our belief that we can do better. We can be an example, not for the sake of being an example, but because it's the right thing to do. Excuse me, I've got a cold. Getting a lot of parking out of downtown, making it a more walkable area, making it more eco-friendly, that's something that we really believe in. And it makes the people who live just outside of the city, because they can't afford to live in the city, furious. The parking meters, you know, make people furious. How much it costs to park downtown, how frustrating it is, makes people furious. But then there are a core group of people who not even a core group. There's a solid group of people who believe that this is how it should be, is that we should have a thriving downtown and that we don't want it clogged with cars. We want it walkable and safe for pedestrians and bicyclists and all of those things. We want you to be able to, at our foundation, we want people who change the sheets at the Marriott and manage it to be able to live downtown and walk to work. That's our foundation. Getting there is hard, and we're trying to figure it out, and we are entrepreneurs. People call our planning department and say, how is it that you are still thriving while places like Oswego or Geneseo are collapsing? We are the example.
And the answer is, you know, when manufacturing actually jobs outnumbered higher education jobs up until 1978, when manufacturing went belly up. But this was a manufacturing and higher education town from World War II until 1978. But since then, it's education. And
now hospitality.
But it's still education. I mean, hospitality is
supporting that.
Is on the fringes. It's a different kind of employment.
So it's that balance that we're seeking. It's that balance that we're looking for, and that comes from information. People need to know why we are building the buildings we're building, the height that we're building, mm-hmm. because there are people. I mean, I have met with as many people as I can pin down in City Hall. And people in government. I was, as a reporter, I had relationships with, you know, all of the county legislators. I have sat down in rooms with them and meetings with them. And, you know, people in City Hall behind the scenes. I met with the mayor last night. You know, I want to know what they're thinking and where they're going so that we can kind of bridge what the people think and what the, you know.
But I'm going to pull this back to the question. Mm. So how mm-hmm. did your experience of feeling silenced about the truth, how did that shape the way you interview people or the way you treat people who are in positions of power or get information or reflect on what they're doing? How did that experience shape the way you engage your life today?
I don't take platitudes ever, if that makes sense. I don't.
I ask
tough questions because I think that the reality, I want to get past the political and the perfunctory, like formal, like, you know, party line stuff. And I want to really know what's going on. You know, I want to talk about how, you know, are we growing too quick? And the truth is, based on what I've talked to and what I've heard, is that in College Town, it's kind of crazy and people are a little afraid of how quickly it's going. Whereas downtown, we've got a better grasp on what's going up. Projects on the horizon, and we're pretty much good and we're solid. That's the sort of thing I want to know. That's the sort of thing that comes with sitting down and talking to somebody and really connecting with them and listening to them in a way that makes them feel like they can give you their truth and that we can then work with that. Because what I can't work with is a stump speech. What I can't work with is, you know, a stamp of, okay, this is what we think.
Right. Let's change gears slightly. And just for the listener, every candidate gets the same questions, and we will broadcast them with each set of answers next to each candidate, and we will then, but we will play the shows online as one each candidate their whole show. So how have you changed? How have you changed in ways that you would not have anticipated or chosen without a push from life?
Very personally, I am in a constant struggle between being settled in who I am and settling. I'm very idealistic. I've been often called naive. I've been told my naivete is beautiful because I'm brave enough and stubborn enough to believe that we are better than we behave. It kind of drives my friends crazy that I can see through about 10 of their outer layers and I go right to the point. A friend of mine is on the radio. She's a disc jockey on one of the, you know, pop radio stations. And in about, in one segment in between mm-hmm. songs, I can tell if she's okay or not. And I'll text her and I'll say, hey, what's wrong? And she's like, how the heck can you tell that? And I can just tell. Mm-hmm. That's who I am. So over the years, not letting go of that has really been important to me. Mm-hmm. So not settling to just not ruffle people's feathers, you know, to be more socially acceptable, to be more like mainstream. I've tried not to settle, but at the same time, I'm older as a mother, mm-hmm. now as a single mother. I've settled. I always fought with the word happy because I thought it was BS. I never thought that happy really meant anything. It's something we just throw around. It's like,
and there's joyful, which is the more profound version,
right,
of happiness.
Because people just say happy, or they say the word love, and what does it really mean?
Right.
And I have become more settled in mm-hmm. what I've experienced happiness now. I have a very fulfilling romantic relationship that I never had before that just is grounding to me. Mm-hmm. And whether or not, you know, we are forever or we are temporary, that joy and that happiness and that contentment is now part of my soul and part of who I am.
Right.
So I can take, I've found myself taking a more forced for the trees perspective, especially since the last election. I really sat back. I'm not a marcher.
Right.
I support those who march. I support those in the streets. And I think it's a beautiful thing. We're founded. We are a country of treasonous protesters. And that's beautiful. I am of the mind. My mind works best when I sit back and put the dots together. And I can say, okay, so you may think you're very different from this person, but truly your foundations are the same. So how can we connect those things? So that settling in me, how I've shifted over the last couple of years, allows me that overarching perspective.
Does it also go the other direction where you may see yourselves as allies or very similar, but you're profoundly different and you haven't faced those differences?
Everyone's profoundly different. And I think that just talking to somebody makes, you're not going to agree, right, necessarily.
No. Yeah. And what you've described is the difference. I mean, many of us come, many people who are sharp and committed come off initially as iconoclastic. And kind of out to just angrily take on and blow up all the myths that you can blow up. And what happens, as you've described, is you've become more less motivated by anger and more motivated by wholeness, would be my interpretation.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which means that you're going to need to settle in the sense of being rested and centered in a place from which you can work.
That's what I've got.
Ambivalent about happiness.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting
and,
to, though.
And that's kind of very much like a life that is that you have more control over than one that is constantly on the attack, on the justice cause, but not necessarily grounded.
Yeah, and in that settling, I felt more confident enough to say, I'm not going to wait until I'm retired to make a difference. I'm not going to wait until I'm retired and I have time and it's a perfect time for everything to contribute to my community. I love this city so much. I can't not want to help protect it, hold it up, make it beautiful and make it, you know, progressive mm-hmm. in a way that stays true to its values. Is it a perfect time for me to run? No. God, no. It's not perfect. Uh-huh. It's not going to be perfect. So, it's going to be hard, but it's worth it.
Right, right. So, and what about this time is hard for you, but important for you to run?
Like I said, I mean, I have two small kids. I'm a single mother. I work my butt off. When they're not with me, I'm working. When they're with me, I'm working. And also, I am incredibly attentive and in tune to what they need psychologically and emotionally, because we are still in that transition period, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure.
Their dad and I get along fine. We're friends. But trying to get them to understand that we just don't get along well when we live together.
Right.
You know, in a very matter of fact kind mm-hmm. of way. I could not have asked for a better, you know, split. There's definitely anger and hurt on both sides, but as far as the kids concerned, we're really doing a great job putting them first, but I'm constantly talking to their teachers and meeting with their teachers and zeroing in and trying not to beat myself up about, mm-hmm. you know, the choices and decisions. It's hard. Right. I don't know what I'm going to be when I grow up. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I have degrees like everybody else in this town, you know, coming out of my ears, and I'm cleaning houses.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, and that is not an uncommon Ithaca story.
No.
And I share pieces of it, too, in terms of construction work and stuff that I do to support my shared journeys habit, and also do some counseling and some group work with people. So it's but for me, that is living on the farm.
Yeah.
So I need a balance of things that are physically demanding, that are intellectually demanding, and that are emotionally demanding. And if I don't have all three in my life, it doesn't feel very good.
Yeah, there's... Yeah.
And the thing that I detest is exercise for the sake of exercise. If you cannot build physical labor into your daily life, you're wasting time.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah, with cleaning for me, I started before I even left my husband, and it was, I needed to get out of the house. I had two kids back to back. They're 15 months apart. I had been nursing her pregnant for 3 years. I was like, I just need to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And, I grew up cleaning, so why not? And yeah. It was good money. And it was the ability to take chaos into order in a way that my mind will never, ever conform as
sure.
I ask.
Right.
And I could listen to books on tape. I now take in, good grief, probably 30 hours of podcasts a week and information mm-hmm. I take in. Mm-hmm. The wealth of knowledge that I have, and we're talking including live stream meetings locally.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The amount of information I have in my head is insane. And I, because of those that information, I can put these pieces together. I can see the perspective mm-hmm. from both the city and the county, how they work together, how they have different philosophies and perspectives, but yet they share the same goals. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I covered the legislature really closely for a long time, and it's important to understand how these things work together, how they're separate, and what their goals and their aims are, and to have a solid grasp on, you know, how this city works, how it needs to work, what decisions to be made, what's important and what's not. And I have that mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I spent hours sitting in these rooms taking in this information or listening to it.
Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
So this is just a fun girl song, so don't judge me. Pink is one of my favorite artists. She actually has a new album out, and it's really remarkable. Talk about feminine power and being a strong woman, a strong mother, words I can't say on the radio. So this is kind of old. This is called Dear Mr. President, and it has Indigo Girls in it. And she wrote it during the George W. Bush years, but... Let me just tell you, it still applies in a lot of ways. So this is Pink singing Dear Mr. President. La la la. La 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 la.
Dear Mr. President, come take a walk with me. Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud? How do you sleep while the rest of us cry? How do you dream when a mother has no chance to say goodbye?
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is R.A.L. Jackson. So tell me about a time when your better judgment proved wrong and it hurt others. And what did you do in response to the others who were hurt by that failure, and how would they describe your response? This to me gets at the heart of the different visions that we live by, up close and personal.
I took this as not political, actually.
Yeah, no, it's not political. It's personal, but to me, it reveals how we our sensibilities for dealing with political issues. But it's deeply personal.
Yeah,
so take it personal. Yeah.
So, I tend to be selfless to my own detriment a lot of times, except I left my husband, and he is devastated. He is broken, and he is upset, and he is angry. And I, even though I had good reasons, even though I did my due diligence, even though I put forth 150,000%, he and my boys are going to struggle with that forever. And what I have done to make it right is I have been more gracious than I technically need to be. I have been accommodating and understanding and supportive. I have been attentive and respectful and all of those things that somebody who is paying penance should be, except I shouldn't have to. But my mistake was I probably knew that I shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. I was looking for that picture, that security, that sense of safety that I didn't feel like I had growing up, or that I had even as a young adult. I never felt safe. I always felt like I was the one who had to do everything and be everything and catch everybody. There's a line in one of my favorite books, again, Don't Judge Me. Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert. It's just a really remarkable book if you can dig into it. The movie is cute, but not like the book. And she's at an ashram in India, and her friend Richard from Texas says, you know, you have control issues. And she's like, I don't have control issues. And she's like, she had to come to the conclusion that if she took her hand off the top of the world, it would continue to spin. It wasn't her that was doing it. So I felt like I just wanted to be able to relax. You know, he had, you know, good education. He was going to have a good job. He came from a good family. Everything was nice and neat and orderly. And I was like, okay, let's just do this. And I knew pretty early on that I was going to outgrow this, that there were a lot of things in it that I just wasn't getting. And at first I didn't think I deserved to get those things. Mm-hmm. And then I just realized that as a human being, you have to, or you will deteriorate rapidly.
Well, if you don't get what you fundamentally need, you'll eventually die on the vine.
And I started to.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that's what it was. I thought it was me. And I struggled for years. And then I was like, you know what? My boys are not going to grow up seeing a healthy relationship. They're not going to grow up seeing a happy mother. And I can't do that to them. My philosophy has always been, they didn't ask to be here. I brought them into this world. It is my responsibility to make sure that they have the best opportunity to be emotionally and mentally successful. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily monetarily, because that is decided in many different ways, but I needed to give them the best shot. And even though right now it seems really hard for them, my younger boy is pretty resilient. My older boy just keeps saying, you know, I miss you when I'm with daddy, and I miss daddy when I'm with you. And I just wish we were all in the same house,
right?
You know, which is a very simple and beautiful thing. And I just very lovingly and sweetly keep reassuring him. And I have to believe that in a couple of years, or in 10 years, he's going to see that I made a very, very hard choice, but I did it in the end for all of us, to give us all a chance to grow more than we would have. And it was a hard decision to make to walk down the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hard decision, an incredibly hard decision to leave. It is a very scary thing to make that, to draw that line in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that I was going to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
is incredibly difficult. But in doing so, I was me. I gave as much information as I could. We went to couples therapy for a year. Everything was on the table. Everything. And I think that that's the only way you can do it. When you have to make the impossible choice, I think every option has to be on the table. Mm-hmm. Your pro-con list better like run down the street. It is so thorough and exhausted. It was not impulsive. It was not impetuous. It was not any of the, it wasn't flippant. I didn't leave for another man. I didn't leave because, you know, I was, you know, a spoiled brat. It was deep. You know, it was a thing. Sure. So that is the biggest one for sure.
Right. And you know, I'm struck by this, your statement with respect to your boy. They didn't ask for this.
Yeah.
And so this is where I want to, you know, and also I'm struck by the most of us have a sense that things weren't right long before we had the clarity or the courage to act upon them, and because I come from an extremely loyal background. Once you make a commitment, you don't do that. So even though, and with my children's mother, people were saying before and 1, 2, 3 years in, this is not really good. I continued, and then we had two kids. And mm-hmm. once you've got two kids, it's a different ballpark. And
oh yeah, it's try just, being yeah. And so a young mother with two small kids.
25 years to kind of understand mm-hmm. and nearly kind of dying on the vine. So I have a sense of it, and it's awkward for everybody, and for people who see bad behavior or desperate behavior, they don't know how to read it and they want to judge it. So there's a whole lot of stuff that happens that makes things life complex. But all in all, none of us quite ask for what we run into because we cannot predict the future.
Right.
And most citizens are shocked and dismayed by many of the questions that they have to address.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because the future is in some sense a divorce from the past.
Yeah.
So how can that inform your functioning? How would that inform your functioning as a representative?
I talked to a woman early on when I was getting signatures to be on the ballot. And she said, honestly, at the end of the day, I just want somebody to hear me. And then even if they make a decision that I don't agree with, at least I know I was heard.
And what does it mean to hear somebody?
It means to give them the time, on a very superficial, simple level, eye contact. Don't just be in the conversation where you're waiting to talk. You're really hearing them. You explain to them all of the options. You work through the possibilities. Okay, so, and she was talking about the smart meters they're putting on houses for NYSEG, and she was worried. She's like, honestly, if some people want them, that's fine. I don't want to ever be told I have to get one. And I'm like, that's really reasonable. None of us want to be told we have to do something.
Right.
You know, in this country, we've got two obligations, to pay taxes and to vote. That was the tent, like that was the, mm-hmm. the foundation mm-hmm. of the whole point. So I said, I understand that. That makes perfect sense. Let me connect you with the people who can give you the answers that I can't, but I understand that. And I'm going to do what I can to make sure that solid wording doesn't end up somewhere. Like she's absolutely right. Like unless there's a darn good reason that you have to, shouldn't end up in language. So I heard her. I gave her the resources she needed to really find out information I didn't have the answers to. Right. And I took a mental note and a physical note to say, okay, this is important. And she's like, even if we decide that this is what we want citywide, I understand it. But thank you for hearing me. That's all I've ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think I was prepping. There's a we're doing a candidates forum. And I was prepping for it, and I was listening to some of the questions they've asked before from the League of Women Voters, and one was like, if you could wave a wand, what would you want to happen? And lots of different things. And I said, I thought to myself, you know, what I would like is to make it so that people feel like their voices are heard again. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. speaking up, going to a meeting, calling a representative will have an effect, that it's not for naught, that it's mm-hmm. not futile to participate in our government, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that you know, that this should be a regular part of who we are, is that we should attend meetings, that our kids should attend meetings, that we should be, politics isn't a dirty word. You know, I was recently told, you know, there should be more coverage, right, leading up to the elections. Like, well, we don't always want to just talk about politics. No, politics is everything. Politics is whether or not your kid gets a good helmet when he's playing high school football. It's whether or not your kid can get a flute, or that the, you know, a kid on the South Side who can't afford it can play soccer because it's an incredibly expensive sport. It is, you know, whether or not you have funding for murals that you'd love to drive by every day. That's all, quote unquote, politics. That dirty thing nobody wants to talk about, that's so negative. That's our whole lives. Unless you live in a yurt in Newfield, which there are a lot of us that do in this area. Everything is politics.
Well, I mean, and it's what I would say, it's the art of negotiating relationships where everybody gets what they need to thrive and doesn't take away from anyone what they need to thrive.
It's the difference, and this is something that's really coming into social psychology right now, with the difference between equality and equity. Equality is giving everybody the same size step stool, no matter what their height is. And equity is making sure that everybody can see over the fence. Right. And that sometimes means giving one person a taller step stool because they start out shorter.
Right. And giving other people, and giving the person who got the shorter step stool because they didn't need it, more of something else because they need that.
Right.
And the thing is we will never balance the accounts.
Right.
But the persons are full and whole.
Yeah, and the trick, and somehow, again, the beauty of the Fifth Ward specifically, which is a lot of Fall Creek. It goes from farm, if you're looking at a map, typical directionals, farm, Willow, and a bit of Cornell Heights, all the way up to Stewart Park north is a Fifth Ward. And we are some of the best, you know, the most fortunate people in the city of Ithaca. If we can stop arguing about the basic stuff like stop signs and who's paving our streets and why it's taking so long, which is a really unacceptable argument to have. It is fundamentally unacceptable. The people that lived on Lincoln Street, and we're not talking one or two people who are not paying attention. The entire street did not know their street was being paved this summer. It lasted 3 weeks longer than it was supposed to, and everybody was pissed, and rightfully so.
And people there's got huge no tickets when excuse. It wasn't being worked on right. for crossing it and it all
is,
sorts of stuff.
There's no excuse for those residents not to know that their street was being torn up on so many levels. Mm-hmm. So if we can get over that stuff, which is like ridiculous in this electronic day and age, then we can do things like sit around a table and come up with the philosophical underpinnings of how to make the whole city a more fruitful and equitable place to live, because we are nothing if not philosophers sitting around a table sharing quinoa, wondering how we can change the world. We should be an example in the Fifth Ward, and we should be reaching across because we are not in a bubble.
Yes, I mean, and I'm going to push back just a little bit here, but not push back. Actually, pushing forward a little more. I think, you know, being heard would address a lot of what we hear about alienation in the political system.
Mm-hmm.
But more than being heard is that this person understands and advocates for me, but also has to advocate for everybody else.
Yes.
And we are all not going to get exactly what we think we need, but hopefully we'll get what we really need.
Right. But my theory is that if a person understands the bigger picture, if they understand why that building is zoned that tall, if people understand that there's no parking requirement for developers downtown, which means they don't have to provide parking, which means there's not going to be a ton of cars. There's not going to be more traffic. Everybody's like, more traffic, give me more. No, it doesn't matter who lives in these buildings. There's no more parking, which means they're not going to bring cars just logistically. They're just not going to. It's designed that way. There are people downtown. Joanne Cornish is the director of planning, mm-hmm. and she is a remarkable woman. And she is busting her butt, making sure that everybody's needs are met. And if people understand what the definition of the word affordable housing is, or housing for who or right. where, then maybe they won't get so caught up in, I didn't get my way.
Well, but the thing is part of being a political entity is grieving. And when you don't get what you think you need, you grieve. And one of the major reasons that we've had the backlash that we've had politically in this country is we have not grieved or explained adequately what's possible.
Loss or change.
Yeah.
Change is big. Change is big for everybody. Whether you're getting married, somebody dies, you rearrange furniture in the living room. And I've actually talked to common council members about this and said, one of the things I would love to see is if we could get somebody from Cornell possibly to come down, a teacher, you know, and to say, okay, this is a psychology of change. When a city changes, when a government changes, when something changes in your life, this is how we deal with it. Because we are changing. We have to evolve to survive. And if we all understood as government officials how that psychologically affects our constituents, we could better deal with it and kind of lead them through it.
Every personality type will handle it slightly differently.
Right.
Every religious tradition, every cultural tradition,
right.
People of different economic class will handle it differently. This is,
yeah.
There is no psychological process generalizable.
No, but we need to understand how it works and the underpinnings so that when...
The triggers, the things
so
that set
we're
it
not,
off.
Well, what we need to not be is people at a table thinking we know everything. Oh, well, we got all the information, so we know better than you. No.
Well, this is a problem of a community that intellectualizes issues, and they have to be processed physically and emotionally, and that's what grief does,
yeah,
on a profound level. I want to switch to one last thing here.
Okay.
How do you take care of yourself? What do you do to restore yourself? How do you take care of yourself intellectually, emotionally, and physically, continuously throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, or occasionally? What do you do, and how do you know you need to do it?
I know I need to do it.
Well, a lot of people may in theory, but not really, or they simply don't know and they just coast.
I know what does it. When I was in the process of leaving my ex and everything, I was spending a lot of time hiking. I still, you know, we were still living in the same house, so I had childcare all the time, which was really helpful. And I hiked a lot.
And hiking really
was
good for working out the kinks, yeah.
That is my roots, is mm-hmm. hiking. I put thousands of miles on my last pair of boots, and I know those woods like the back of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it. And I get out there as much as I can, but not enough. And even if I hit like the Bear Trail at Buttermilk, and it's not long and it's not hard, but it's like I get to the middle and I'm just in that canopy and I take a minute and I'm like, this is my place. I feel grounded. I feel connected. I feel like I can breathe for the first time. I've started going back to the gym, which was a real struggle after I left because, childcare is, mm-hmm. Because I have the money for Friday, if I'm not working, I have them.
Right.
So I get paid by the hour. So taking an hour out of the day is me losing money,
right.
Which is me losing food for them.
Or putting it all on the weekend when it's your,
No, but I still work on weekends.
That's right, yeah.
So it's all around. So anyway, so I've leaned on people. I've been scrappy about it, and I started going back to the gym, and it has made huge difference for me to help work stuff out. I am the kind of person that I do have so much energy. I do have so much enthusiasm that if I don't get some of that out, it is like kind of crazy. So for me,
what happens if you don't resolve the physical tension to get it out?
It's just too much.
How do you know you're kind of off the rails, headed off the rails?
I'll run into some poor friend of mine and ramble on about planning and development for 45 minutes. Or, you know, I'll end up in a conversation. I'll be like, but if we just, and the center states and, you know, do you see what happened at the EPA? Like, I mean, I'll kind of get excited and ramble off, or I'll just get, you know, stressed. For me, if, you know, I'm an A type. So if in the morning, if the first thing that I can do is meet a challenge and overcome it, which is for me is lifting. I like to lift a lot,
mm-hmm.
Or to climb a mountain. So if I can overcome that challenge first, the rest of the day is kind of cake.
Uh-huh.
So the beauty of it kind of becomes that I can do after that, like everything is easy. Everything is more settled. Everything is calmer.
Sure.
So I do that. There's a mandatory snuggling in my house. The boys' mm-hmm. room is farther down the hall than mine. They have to pass me to either get to the bathroom or go down the stairs so they go to the main part of the house. So mama snuggles are mandatory. And we talk about our dreams and we snuggle and we talk about our day and what's mm-hmm. going to be mm-hmm. and what the weather's going to be like, what we should wear. That's really important to me. And it's become really important to them.
Right. And what makes it so important?
Physical touch for me is everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I am a hugger. I will touch you. I will call you honey.
Mm-hmm.
I will love you right away.
Right.
I have Italian and Jewish heritage. I will feed you and nag you and love you forever.
But you're also talking, the physicality is clear, but also the idea of putting the day in perspective, how to dress for the weather, how to anticipate what's coming up, how to kind of be.
I'm giving them control of their environment where they feel currently that they don't have a lot of control because of the split.
Yeah, yeah. But it also works emotionally and intellectually, and that kind of is a segue for the next question. How do you take care of your? You've gone through kind of the physical stuff that helps to calm, to keep the body in shape and helps to calm the mind and the heart. But how do you actually take care of yourself intellectually or emotionally?
Emotionally, I have an amazing support. I was very, very lucky to find a partner who is emotionally there for me. In a big way. And we both love music and we both love to laugh. Hurling a pillow at each other across the room is a normal thing. There's always a physical presence. He always has like a hand on my back or my shoulder.
Sure.
You know, he'll stop me and say, honey, I've got it.
Right.
And being able to rely on somebody else for me is that like another a remnant of my childhood of that constant stress of like something bad is going to happen, knowing that I have that solid rock next to me.
Somebody's got your back.
What I drop, he will catch.
And I've
never had that before. It's always been, I have to catch every plate.
Right.
And that's so nice. So that to me has made a remarkable difference in my physical health, my mental health. And music is big for me. It's absolutely huge. And we share that, he and I, which is really great.
To listen or to perform together? Or both?
I'm a listener. I have always loved music. I was a musician in high school, but I was never any good. So I am a curator and a collector. For my meet and greet, somebody was advising me. They're like, you know, don't worry about the music. Just get people together. And I'm like, no. No, you don't understand. It's the opposite. Is where there is music, there is a voice. You know, it can evoke emotion. It can connect people in a way that talking cannot. And I had the most beautiful experience just watching the musicians who came, like move in and out with each other. It wasn't definitive sets. It was, hey, I'm going to grab my guitar because I'm here and we're going to play together. And then you're going to play with the next person. And it was this organic, them trying to compose as they went. And it was like the most remarkable thing. So to me, it's physical activity, physical touch. You know, feeling safe, feeling secure, knowing that when to ask for help, knowing and being brave enough to say, I'm not okay.
Right.
And something has to shift and making that shift.
Right.
Yeah, so, all of those things.
And from what I'm inferring from what you're saying and not saying is that the intellectual piece is kind of, it's kind of just how you work in your head. And that's kind of a continuous activity.
Yeah, well, people too is, I mean, going to meetings, talking to, knocking on doors, talking to other people, that's when these little, like, they're like little lightning bugs almost. You're like, oh, that's a connected. You know, it's like, I won't sit down to write something. I will, you know, go over it in my head, like, and I will, or I'll talk to somebody else. I'll be like, oh, that's it. That's my connecting piece that lets everything else flow from it.
So what you, I'm just going to.
Closet. I'm a classic extrovert.
Well, but what you've said is that you get intellectual ideas and you integrate them in relationship with others as they emerge in the process. And it's not a book thing. It's not a written thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm years of college and taking in all the information, reading all the articles and all the books, and then wandering for a couple of days until something connects all of those things together. And then once they're all connected, then the thesis flows from it.
Yep. Ariel, it's been wonderful to get to know you. What should we close the show with?
So this is a fun song. It's, again, old, from 2000. I don't want to call it old. It makes me old. Dispatch is a kind of an old, fun band. This song is called The General. And I was raised in a relatively conservative family. But I've always been the kind of person to take in multiple perspectives at once. I think it's essential. I still take in conservative and liberal media because I think it's so important. I was driving on my way to vote for George W. Bush in the first election in 2000. I remember which one it was. Anyway, so while I was listening to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, that was who I was. And my politics, my party affiliation has evolved over the years drastically. And this was one of the songs that kind of got that going, because he says, you know, I have seen the others and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting.
Yep.
And that line, I was like, wait a second, what is he saying? he is the general. His purpose, like his sole purpose, is to go out there and fight and to win. And he's like, no, I've looked in their eyes. This isn't a fight worth fighting. Put down your guns. Mm-hmm. And if you choose to, you can go home. So it's making a conscious choice whether to fight, whether to stay, how to connect, and all of those things. I thought it was a poignant, you know, nod to evolution. And
it reinforces the notion of the being hurt, from being silenced early on to fighting to now choosing your battles more carefully.
Yeah.
Here we go.
There was a decorated general with a heart of gold that likened him to all the stories he told of past battles won and lost and legends of old. A seasoned veteran in his own time, on the battlefield he gained respectful fame, with many medals of bravery and stripes to his name. He grew a beard as soon as he could to cover the scars on his face, and always urged his men on. But on the eve of a great battle with the infantry and dream, the old general tossed in his sleep and wrestled with its meaning. He awoke from that night to tell what he had seen, and walked slowly out of his tent. All the men held tall with their chests in the air, with the courage in their blood and a fire in their stare. And it was a gray morning and they all wondered how they would fare, till the old general told them to go home. He said,
I have seen the others, and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting. And I've seen their mothers, and I will not follow me where I'm going. So take a shower and shine your shoes, you got no time to lose. If you are young men, you must be living. Take a shower and shine your shoes, you got no time to lose. If you are young men, you must be living. Go now, you are forgiven.
But the men stood fast with their guns on their shoulders, not knowing what to do with the contradicting orders. The general said he would do his own duty, but he would extend it no further. The men could go as they pleased, but not a man moved. Their eyes gazed straight ahead, till one by one they stepped back, and not a word was said. And the old general was left with his own words echoing in his head. He then prepared to fight. He said,
I have seen the others, and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting. No, and I've seen their mothers, and I will no other to follow me where I'm going. So take a shower and shine your shoes, oh, you got no time to lose. You are young men, you must be living. Yeah, take a shower and shine your shoes, oh, you got no time to lose. You are young men, you must be living. Go now, you are forgiven.
Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven. Go. Yeah. Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven. Go. Oh. Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven.